This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
It's great to have Dr. Tom Woods back again. Tom is Senior Fellow in American History at the Mises Institute, author of 8 books. And I want to talk about a book of his that's not discussed very much, although it got huge attention when it won the Templeton Enterprise Award in 2006, a $50,000 prize. So that was very nice and was the most significant book of the year in the view of the Templeton Foundation. I know in my own experience, I had the great honor of working for a man called Neil McCaffrey. He was the founder of Arlington House Publishers, the only conservative libertarian book publisher in this country for many years, of the Conservative Book Club. He'd been a very significant figure in the publishing industry at Doubleday and other publishers ahead of time. And he was somebody who was very unusual, in my view, somebody who really knew Austrian economics and was also a serious Catholic. And he used to complain to me, this we're talking the late 1960s, that there were no decent Catholic economists since the late Scholastics, and that they were all just terrible. And I'm afraid I've come to the conclusion that's pretty much correct. But Tom Woods, who's an economist in fact, as well as an historian, did a lot of good for the world of economics, and I would say for the Catholic Church too, when he wrote his book, The Church and the Market. This has been a very controversial book. Liberals don't like it. Paleoconservatives don't like it. People who still advocate the economics of Belloc and Chesterton or medieval guilds or other systems that would immediately lead to the mass starvation of the human population of the planet Earth were they put into effect. Thank goodness Tom has written this book. I think it's had good effect. I hope it has better effect. And Tom, do you want to talk a little bit about The Church and the Market, what you have to say in it, and maybe why it's been so unbelievably controversial?
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, you would think a scholarly book like this, you know, tend not to provoke so much controversy. But, well, I'll just, first of all, just explain what the basic thesis of the book is. For years, I've been reading about the Austrian school, reading deeply the literature in it, and I've become convinced that it makes the most sense of anything I've ever read. I mean, it's incredibly exciting intellectually. Once you delve into it, I mean, you just can't stop reading it. So the problem, though, is that a lot of Catholics, because they read the papal encyclicals on the economy or on various aspects of economics, are convinced that, you know, you have to be some kind of interventionist or, you know, whatever in order to be a faithful Catholic. And so I am, you know, I'm going up against this view. But what in fact I'm saying is very simple. It's that, you know, the Pope's authority deals with matters of faith and morals. And my opponents say that, you know, well, listen, economics is a moral science, and so it's not exempt from evaluation by the popes. And this is a category mistake. I think people are misunderstanding what economics is. Economics deals with basically the cause and effect relationships that we see that result from the phenomenon of human choice. That economics is a science that deals with causal laws. That if the money supply is increased, prices will tend to be higher than they would have been if it hadn't been increased. An economy based on the division of labor will be more physically productive than an economy that is not based on the division of labor, or in which the division of labor has not been extended as far. I mean, these are commonsensical observations, and they're observations that hold true always, because they're dealing with counterfactual statements. They're saying that if, for example, if you raise the minimum wage, there will be more unemployment than there would have been if you had not raised the minimum wage. And then we, you know, of course, justify these statements. We don't just make them arbitrarily. We justify them. But the point is that the nexus of causal relationships that constitutes what I consider to be the theoretical edifice of economics, that's not a matter of faith and morals. That's just a fact. These are just facts about the world we live in. And you can't protest them. You can't have hunger strikes against them. They are a fact of nature, and you have to reckon with them. And so if you're going to say things about the economy that are useful and that are going to benefit the human race, you have to take them into account. So a lot of people, though, who try to deal with this subject from a free market point of view, and I respect these people, have tried to take a you know, perhaps a more timid approach, which is to, you know, quote 5 sentences from the popes where they seem to support the free market, and then triumphantly announce the popes support the free market, and that's the end of the discussion. And then, of course, they open themselves up to the obvious reply, what about the other 87 sentences? So what I'm trying to do is take a much more direct approach. I mean, I'm not in any seminary, I'm not a parish priest, I'm not in a monastery, I'm not I can say what I want to about this without any fear of reprisal. So my argument has been that one is perfectly at liberty, as a Catholic who believes in what the magisterium teaches, to say that it's obviously not within the Pope's authority, except in the most ridiculous caricatures of papal authority, to say what the cause and effect relationships are between trade, nature, tariffs, and trade. These are obviously debatable questions. And, of course, again, there is a moral dimension to economics. I mean, you know, a businessman shouldn't commit fraud. People should be generous with their wealth. All these things are the popes are perfectly at liberty to instruct us on. They can also say, look, the family is a very important social unit, and we want to see the family prosper. But as soon as they start saying, now here's the most effective way for the family to prosper, we need antitrust laws, we need this or that, well, again, now you're dealing with this causal nexus that does not, by any stretch of the imagination, by any logical understanding, belong to the realm of faith and morals. Now you are going beyond what would be a magisterial statement, and now you're dealing with a personal opinion, and personal opinions are open to free discussion. So I do that, and so the book is actually a relentless overview of all kinds of economic topics, from everything from foreign aid to antitrust to wage rates and employment and prices and the welfare state, and then it examines medieval guilds and all these other systems that are proposed to us, and it takes a strict Austrian line, shows how compatible this is, and it's not special pleading. It shows how compatible this is with a traditional Catholic understanding. And it's true, Lou, I've taken some abuse on this, but, you know, what fun is life if you don't take some abuse? You're not doing anything. You're not accomplishing anything if you're not taking some abuse. But what's interesting to me is how much friendly response I've gotten. I mean, the Homiletic and Pastoral Review is a 100-year-old, venerable publication that's distributed to a lot of priests, and a lot of laymen read it as well. And nobody would ever be so blockheaded as to question the loyalty to the church of the Homiletic and Pastoral Review. They devoted their feature book review to the book, and a distinguished professor of economics, that's actually his title, distinguished professor of finance at Fordham University, gave it a glowing review and said, I think everybody should read this and take into account what it says. It seems perfectly sensible to me. I've had department chairmen at important Catholic colleges using it as the basis of courses. I've gotten all kinds of very favorable feedback from all different quarters on the book. So, you know, if I'm wrong or crazy or a heretic or whatever, all these absurd things that have been alleged, then the problem is pretty deep, because it's gotten major endorsements from major people whose credentials I don't think my opponents really want to call into question.
Tom, hasn't this book had a worldwide success? I mean, I know from my own experience in our own country, priests and lay people, students, have been deeply influenced by this book. I mean, it's a mind-opening, it's a mind-freeing book. But it's not only here in Latin America, in Poland, where else? Italy, Spain, where else has it been published?
That's right. Well, we've had several translations so far. And again, it's very rare. It's rarer to have translations of this type of book than of, you know, my politically incorrect guide to American history, for example. But we've had a very good Spanish translation. We've had an Italian one and a Polish one that have done well. The Italian one has a wonderful, very long introduction by Carlo Lottieri, who's a great Catholic libertarian in Europe. And I've done little speaking tours of, well, not little, in Poland. It was a huge speaking tour of Poland where I spoke at Catholic seminaries. And again, very well received. You know, sometimes I got some challenging questions, but always phrased respectfully. Like, nobody said, you crazy heretic, get out of our seminary. And no, it wouldn't even have occurred to them to, you know, to act in a fashion like that. I went to Chile and had a nice speaking tour there. Again, very well received. Economists at a very conservative university down there received what I had to say with relief and joy. They were happy that finally this was being said. And, you know, and I do see articles being written from time to time on this subject in which the argument seems to resemble very much what I'm saying. And it's the type of argument I was hoping to start hearing, that it's not just simply, well, you know, the Pope says that free trade is the wrong way to go for the third world, so therefore it is. You know, Paul VI was just wrong about that. He was just clearly wrong. There is no defending that statement. I mean, he didn't put it quite that way, but very, very similar to that. We need import substitution in the third world, which is basically protectionism. And you look at the countries that have prospered, they're the ones that have opened themselves up to the global market, and the ones that are the most isolated are the ones that are doing the worst, that are retrogressing. I mean, this is just a fact. And it doesn't give me any pleasure to point this out. It's not like I want to spit on Paul VI's grave or anything. I take no pleasure in this. But if we want to be taken seriously as intellectuals, as Catholics, we cannot pretend these things don't exist. The popes should be treated with respect, and I think some of these popes are great heroic figures for many reasons. But, you know, we have to confront statements like this that are made that put Catholics in a very difficult spot when they know full well that these recommendations are going to have the opposite of their intended effect. You know, the popes, if they want to say things like this, they should be informed about what they're saying, and they should make them as personal statements and not make them in the context of encyclicals, because then you cause totally unnecessary crises of conscience for perfectly good members of the faithful.
Tom, I always liked the point you made early on about, obviously, church officials rightly have something to say about the building of churches, the design of churches, but that if you had the Pope declaring in an encyclical that this is the way to build a roof, these are the materials to be used, this is the design, we would think, well, wait a minute.
Of course.
Isn't there something funny about that? I might just say also that I'm not surprised that you were cheered in foreign seminaries. Have you spoken in any American seminaries?
I haven't. I haven't been invited.
I'm not surprised.
We'll see what the future holds, of course. And I do like that building example. And the usual response I get is just a really not very well thought out response. But economics is different from architecture. It's a moral science. And okay, look, you know, if you want to keep saying that, why don't we say that? You can talk about that and call that economics, but I'll talk about economics with a little star after it. And economics with a little star is a discipline that I will define as the study of human action and its implications that explains to us what the cause and effect nexus is that results from our understanding of this, and that only separately deals with the moral aspect, which would be, for example, we can understand what the likely consequences will be if you impose a tariff on steel. But for me then to say, therefore, we shouldn't have a tariff on steel, or therefore we should, it seems somewhat remote from the subject matter of economics. That's up to individuals to decide on their own to be moral philosophers and decide whether they want tariffs or not. That seems to me to be a separate study. So I'll just, if it'll make people happy, what I'm dealing with is economics with a little star after it that just deals with this cause and effect nexus. And it seems to me that people are able to study medicine in this way, and nobody says, medicine is a moral science. Of course there's a moral dimension to medicine. You know, of course, a physician shouldn't plunge a dagger through a patient's heart. Obviously, there's a moral dimension. There's a moral dimension to all sciences, to physics, to the study of nuclear power, for example. You know, we can learn, the sciences can tell us how to build a nuclear missile, but we don't say that the sciences are somehow deficient because they don't instruct us as to whether it would ever be moral to use a nuclear missile. That's not what their job is. That's our job as individuals. It's the job of ethicists and moral philosophers to make these judgments. And so I get accused of being, just an idiot, or I don't understand what economics is. I think my accusers don't fully understand the nature of it. I mean, if I'm going to talk about, for example, tax rates and say, here would be the consequences of a 90% tax rate, or at least the likely consequences, am I really deficient if I don't then go on to say, therefore, we shouldn't have one? I mean, this is a completely separate consideration. And of course I think we shouldn't have a 90% tax rate. Of course I think a lot of these things shouldn't have these tariffs. But that is a completely separate matter. It seems to me economists have enough to do just learning and teaching people about the consequences and the implications of human action to also try to make them amateur armchair philosophers. Frankly, I don't think a lot of them would be particularly good at it. Just let them specialize in what they're good at.
Tom, great to have you here. I highly recommend The Church on the Market. If you look at Tom's archive or any of his new articles on lewrockwell.com, you'll see the book linked at the bottom, and you can get it. It's like everything Tom does, beautifully written, comprehensible, persuasive, and I think a book that, unlike, say, The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History, would just immediately leap to the New York Times bestseller list and stayed there for a long time. This is a book that starts small and starts slow and grows every year in importance, not only in our own country, but all over the world. And all I can say is thank you very, very much for writing it.
And thanks, Lou, for having me. My pleasure.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show, produced by LouRockwell.com. the best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@lourockwell.com. And thanks for listening.